Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, June 21st, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England, the site of the G7 summit. Alex, how are things?
Very good, Graham. Got a little quiet this week.
So the G7 left town, and I'm going to guess that Joe Biden did not come knocking on your door to say hi to a fellow University of Delaware grad. Is that correct?
I'm not sure why that didn't happen, but it didn't happen. You are correct. I did watch the same aerial display show that my alumni colleague watched, but that's as close as we got.
Got it. All right. Well, I'm glad that you survived the all those world leaders hanging out in your remote corner of the earth, which, you know, must have been a strange thing, given that, like...
I did hear, oddly, actually, I should have mentioned this, the Australian Prime Minister was having a beer in one of our local pubs and insisted on just being in the bar having a beer.
Wow.
I don't know if this is public information or shouldn't be disclosed, but I just thought that was really cool. He has ancestors that came from Cornwall, which basically means he's got some dodgy relations in his family because they were shipped to Australia.
Oh, boy. So that's interesting, though, that so you would not have been allowed into the pub at that time.
Well, I don't know that. I actually think he made a point of just going in.
Interesting. That's cool.
Yeah.
Huh. Being with the people.
Yeah, because someone told my wife about it anyway. So yeah, I thought it was really interesting. Very cool. Very cool.
Cool. So Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business continues to sponsor the podcast, which means that either they love what we're doing, or they just maybe have never listened. So we don't know, but we're going to hear from them, and then we're going to get on with the rest of the show. So this is let's hear from Carnegie Mellon. Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business has the number one online MBA program, according to U.S. News and World Report. Why? Because Tepper MBAs are taught to thrive where data analytics, technology, and business intersect. At Tepper, students learn the latest analytic and management skills to not only lead but succeed in an increasingly complex business world. You'll learn from Carnegie Mellon's internationally renowned faculty in a vigorous curriculum and enjoy globally networked career and alumni support. Earn your MBA in one of three formats built to fit your lifestyle. There's never been a better time to earn your MBA. For more information, go to cmu.edu/Tepper. That's T-E-P-P-E-R. All right, so give me the week recap, Alex. What's been going on the MBA admissions front, holding G7 stuff aside?
Well, actually, I mean, we're at that time of year. Things are super quiet, Graham. As far as I can tell, in terms of what's going on for this season, I think people are starting to figure out sort of applications for next season. We talked about this a little bit before. You know, there will be some movement on wait lists as we get closer to that sort of preterm time. And even when folks start arriving and the numbers don't quite add up, there might be a little bit of movement on the wait list. But it's going to be very small movements at this point. What folks need to recognize is schools will still over admit a little bit, so they'll still have a few more folks in their class than they want, because they know one or two folks are going to drop off at this point. And so basically what needs to happen is more folks need to drop off than the schools anticipate in order for them to go to the waitlist.
All right, so that was your pep talk for the waitlisters today.
Yeah, not particularly positive.
But I mean, it is true. There will be, you know, drips and drabs of movement going forward. But you actually remind me of, you know, we talked about this earlier, but there's a, when I worked in admissions at Wharton at the same time as you, I remember, you know, sometimes schools over admit, and I remember the admissions director had to go and do, offer up like deferrals to people because she was just looking for a way to lower that number, because there is a capacity limit, you know, in terms of classroom size and everything. So yeah, we'll see. I think, you know, this year's a little strange just because COVID still in various parts of the world is throwing a curveball, right? So it's, you know, we'll see what happens. But best of luck to anybody that's on the wait list. The other big thing, Alex, as you know, is that schools continue to release their essay topics and we continue to analyze them. Or I guess I should say you, because I haven't really been as involved in that process, but we've released essay topic analyses for Columbia, Michigan, and UCLA Anderson over the last week or so, because all of those schools have published their topics. And so we break down the questions and try to give people information on how they might approach answering those questions. And if you're keeping score at home, we've also recently, and I say recently over the last few weeks, run out our essay topic analyses for Berkeley, Cambridge, Harvard, LBS, and UVA Darden. And so stay tuned for more of those Alex, any thoughts on essays? I know you were you've been helping out behind the scenes on some of the analysis of a recent school that a recent batch. Yeah, what tell me about that.
The process is someone smarter than me in on our team does the essay topic analyses, and then they're generous enough to share with me their interpretation, and then I just email them back afterwards and say it's absolutely fantastic. But I mean, this morning's with Stearns, and I was like, wow, these guys absolutely want to make sure you're not recycling essays from other schools, because their essay topics are completely out of left field. I mean, they're interesting, and I get the value of what they can get out of these essays, but surely no one else is asking them in the same manner that Stern is.
Well, you know, they are downtown in New York in the kind of artsy neighborhood, right? They're in the Village. And so they're, you know, they've always had a knack for coming up with cool. I actually still remember for many years they had an essay which was not an essay at all. It was like, use a piece of paper, 8.5 by 11, to make a collage or write a poem or draw a picture, do whatever you want with that piece of paper to tell your classmates something about you. And that always was a, you know, tricky one.
They still have something similar, right? It's like basically give us 6 pictures and then describe them.
Yes. Yeah. They eventually shifted to a slightly more focused, like this 6 picture thing, which is cool too. I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, we'll read your analysis that'll with great interest. I think that'll probably even be, it might be on the site already as this podcast airs. So yeah, stay tuned, everyone. Alex, you know, we got an audio clip from someone who listens to the show who they sent, you know, we had asked for audio clips for people to tell us like why they listen, what they're doing when they listen as a part of our 100th episode celebration. And this came in after the deadline, but it was a nice clip and I, you know, feel for the guy. And so I asked Dennis to drop it in. So we're going to hear from a listener and then we'll move on with some other stuff here.
Hi, Alex and Graham. This is Tim from San Francisco. I love the show and I love listening to it when I'm either restringing my tennis racket or riding my bicycle around San Francisco. I'm also glad that I am at least the third person that I've heard you cite on your show that listens while riding their bike around the city. So keep up the great work. Thanks for all the good content and looking forward to applying to business school this upcoming fall.
All right, so Alex, I know you haven't heard the clip that just aired, but it was funny because the guy rides his bike around San Francisco and listens to the show. So another activity that people are pursuing while you know tuning in. I did want to thank that person for sending it in. We love those clips, and we'll probably always find a way to throw them into an episode if anyone else is so inclined to send one along. Over on the website these days, Alex, we've been running out the last of our Real Humans alumni series, where we just try to take MBA grads who have cool jobs and profile them so that people who are applying to business school can kind of see what's down the road, right? So this week we ran out someone who works at Mondelez Craft. She's an MIT grad from the class of 2018, and she's a senior manager in commercial finance for that entity. We also had a Nike candidate who is a Kellogg class of 2020 graduate, and she is a corporate strategy manager for Nike. So a couple more of those. I think we're running out. We've done, I mean, I want to say more than 20 or 30 of them over the last several months. And so we're kind of coming to an end on the Real Humans alumni. We're going to turn our attention to another Real Humans series that's going to focus on like numbers and just information about the people in these classes at top schools, some of the key statistics. I think it's going to be called Real Data of MBA Students or something. So stay tuned for that. Alex, we've got these essay events coming up next month too. I'm looking forward to it. We've got 3 Wednesdays in a row. So July 14th, 21st, and 28th. And you got to sign up in advance. They're at noon Eastern. We're going to sit down with admissions directors from a handful of top MBA programs and ask them all about their essay questions. I'm going to MC these things, so that means I got to actually start getting familiar with their essay questions and come up with some really good creative questions to ask them so that I can, you know, help everyone who's tuning in to sort of get a head start on their essay writing. But that should be fun. Be sure to go to clearadmit.com and sign up. Alex, we might need your help on some of those. I don't know. We'll see how that all unfolds. But I know you've in the past helped us with some of the breakout rooms because the schools all do individual discussions with candidates who are interested right after the main session is done. So that'll be fun.
How's signups looking?
You know, that's already, I Mike actually on our team shared, there are hundreds of people signed up for these things already. So it's nuts. And we're a month out. So nice. Yeah, they'll be busy. It'll be fun. We'll continue to do Clubhouse every Thursday. Note that's a new day of the week that we're doing it, every Thursday at noon Eastern. So we'll continue to be on Clubhouse.
Oddly enough, it's the same day we're recording this podcast. That's so it's right. Like in an hour.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Or at least last week's is in an hour. Go figure.
Yeah. So I hope you're ready for that, actually. all right. So last thing before we get into our wiretaps portion and the candidates that you selected this week, we got a review and it comes from Australia. And the title of the review is Awesome Info, Accessible Hosts. It's a 5-star rating, and the candidate wrote, very informative discussion and tips on all things MBA. The hosts are incredibly accessible via multiple mediums and extremely generous in sharing their wealth of knowledge. Keep up the great work, gents. So that was cool to get a review from Australia. So we have at least one listener down there. That's good.
I'm going to part with a bit of knowledge for this very kind gentleman. Hmm? It's media, not mediums.
Oh, that's true. Good
catch. How about
that? Yeah, all right.
So listen maybe to our podcast and you'll learn something.
at least one thing each week, yeah. So, yeah. all right. So, as always, if anyone has any questions or wants to just write to either of us, you can just send an email to info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject line wiretaps and we will answer your questions or talk about you on the show, whatever you need. So reach out if you feel like it. Alex, without further ado, shall we dive in and get into our candidates for this week?
Let's kick on.
All right. So this is Wiretaps candidate number one. This is an ApplyWire entry from a guy, a male candidate who's going to be entering business school with any luck in the fall of 22. He's got 6 schools on the target list, and those schools are Berkeley, Harvard, Stanford, UCLA, Wharton, and Yale. This candidate did some work for Teach for America, then went and did some work as a software engineer and has also done some product marketing. They want to get into tech and/or nonprofit social impact after business school. And they indicated a handful of kind of ed tech or, you know, different companies as targets, including Coursera, Udemy, Springboard Collective, and Edmondo. So some cool targets. GRE score is a 326. GPA is a 3.7, and they have 7 years of work experience. This candidate is in California and would like to stay there. So that's probably why we see Berkeley, UCLA, and Stanford on the list. They indicate that they love the podcast and that they are a biracial, underrepresented minority, male, as I said. They majored in philosophy at Berkeley / UCLA. So I don't know what that, well, I guess they went to both, they must have transferred or something, right? So in any event, they gave us a ton of information about their career to date, some of their current extracurriculars. So I don't know, Alex, if you'd be willing to like share any of the, you know, ideas they shared, or, you know, they even talked a little about their career plan and kind of ed tech possibilities and things. But what do you make of this candidate? Because there's a lot to chew on here.
Frankly, I think they're extraordinary. They said somewhere, homeless background growing up. I mean, I guess my point is, it seems like they've come very far.
Agreed.
And the reason why I bring this up is, you work 3 or 4 years, 5 years post undergrad, and you're in a certain job, whatever, and it's now time to get an MBA. That's very good. And you've got a lot of candidates in a similar sort of position, and all competing for these spots. That's very good. That's kind of how the world works. But what we often don't look into is how far has someone come to get into that position? So candidate A may have, you know, had a very fortunate upbringing like I had, had pretty much everything handed to them, did all the right things, but the right things were always available to them, right? And lots of folks are fortunate enough to be in that position. And you can't discriminate against those folks. They did all the right things. That's fantastic. But then you also get folks that weren't provided all the access and the equal access along the way, mm-hmm. but strived and made the most of what they had, and then ultimately were able to become very successful. So to me, this person falls squarely into that second bucket, and as a striver, clearly should be rewarded for the trajectory, or whatever the right word is, of that pathway. and so forth. So quite frankly, Graham, and you know, we could go into the idea, you know, to the notion that they were in Teach for America. They were first out of 800 on some project. You know, they then went into software development and they were extraordinarily successful there. And then the next step, and they just seems like wherever they've gone, they've been fantastic. So at the end of the day, Graham, top brow candidate in my book.
Yeah, and I think you're actually hitting upon something that's increasingly of import to admissions officers, and that is to figure out, yeah, like how much grit and, you know, as you said, is someone a striver? What have they been able to overcome along the way? And that's increasingly valuable, I think, in the admissions world, and especially against this landscape of, you know, a lot of schools are waiving testing requirements, or it seems like every day there's a new leading MBA program that's kind of saying, well, we'll be, you know, you can apply for a waiver on the standardized tests. And so I think schools are looking for other ways to measure candidates and their potential. And I think, you know, this is an interesting case. You know, this person was homeless for a time when they were young. They have, as you said, you know, had an amazing trajectory. And, you know, the only thing that, you know, I can't help but put my admissions, you know, hat on and try to find, like, is there any weakness, you know, in a candidacy? And the only thing that jumped out at me was I wondered if as a philosophy major, would there be concern about quantitative readiness, you know, in terms of the rigor of an MBA program? But, you know, they have an 89th percentile on the GRE and the math section, which is pretty darn good. So I feel like they're probably okay, and I haven't seen their transcript. Maybe they have calculus and stats and econ or whatever on the transcript anyway, and have great grades there. But
and presumably, Graham, they're in a pretty technical role,
yeah.
Or at least they have quite a lot of good technical experience. And I know we don't tend to, that doesn't tend to replace the academic transcript, but nevertheless, it shows they've got the chops for numbers and stuff.
Yeah, I'm just not, given everything else in this profile, I'm not overly worried about it. You know, I think this person's going to write their ticket. They have an interesting background. As long as they execute, you know, on the applications. The one thing I did want to call your attention to is that it seems like their current outside activities or, you know, kind of community service or hobbies, it seems like a lot of it's a bit more informal, or it did from the initial post. And so I actually asked them about this and they wrote back and said that, you know, that they have played piano for 20 years, that they're an avid fisherman, that they, you know, have lead an adult softball team of 15 individuals. So they are doing some stuff and they also do some mentoring. But again, a lot of this is informal. So I don't know, like, do you have any advice for someone, like, when your activities are pretty much informal? It's not like you can be like, oh, I've worked at, you know, Habitat for Humanity or some, you know, famous charitable organization, and you have dates and even a specific role and maybe even a letter of recommendation that's coming from someone who's sort of supervised you there. Like, what do you do when you're in more informal kind of activities?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it can be more challenging, but I guess I'd throw two pieces of not necessarily advice back, but thoughts. Yeah, thoughts more so. One is, you know, there might be content from these informal activities that become fodder for you know, the essays, right?
Yeah.
So if you're talking about, you know, the most famous essay on the planet, which he'll need to write, what means most to you and why, then, you know, he's probably going to work in some of this mentoring stuff that they've done along the way, you know, and so on and so forth. So looking at, you know, how you could weave some of the content into the essay structure, obviously, is a way to deal with that. And I would also say only do stuff about which you're passionate. So, I mean, I love the idea of Habitat for Humanity and folks doing that, but I hate the idea that some folks are doing it just to check the box rather than, yeah, I really want to contribute and do stuff and do it in this sort of context and so on and so forth. And it seems to me that this type of candidate is only doing stuff that they're really interested and passionate about. Although being passionate about fishing, I'm not sure about that. I love to eat the fish once it's caught, but I actually take my boat out and just drive around. I can't be bothered to put a line in the water. And what I'll do is I'll come back from my fishing trip, then I'll go to the fishmongers and say, look what I got.
Yeah, it's well, but this person, I mean, this guy is a serious fisherman. Like,
yeah,
he's literally caught every local species that is available in California.
But to me, dude, this guy, whatever they do, they're serious about it.
Yeah, it's all
that
out.
That comes through in all that they've told us, and that's what the AdCom's going to like.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm convinced of that.
Yeah, so great candidacy. I want to thank him for sharing his profile on the site. I just think it's so interesting to read about this stuff and for other applicants to see like what people have done. And I think sometimes a light bulb goes off and people realize, oh, I should talk about that too. Or, you know, like, because this is a really thorough profile that they provided us with.
Yeah.
All right. So best of luck to that candidate. Hopefully he's tuning in and gets to hear this review. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this candidate has just three schools on the target list, and they're going to be applying for, again, fall 22. The schools are Columbia, INSEAD, and University of Chicago Booth. They have been working pre-MBA career in PWM, was the acronym that was given, which took me a second, but then I realized stands for Private Wealth Management. Post-MBA, they want to get into investment banking. GMAT score is 740. GPA a 3.4. They have 6 years of work experience, and they are located in Southeast Asia. They did indicate in the notes some really important information, and that is that they're a reapplicant who applied to both Booth and Columbia for this past cycle, but they ended up getting waitlisted and rejected. And they did have interviews in both cases. But, you know, I guess it was maybe round one for Booth, and then they applied in January for Columbia, and they're wondering what may have gone wrong. They also, maybe it's around timing, so we can talk about that. But they also did ask us a question, which is, you know, what about, like, what's the best reapplication strategy? They're worried about, like, recommendation letters, and, yeah, just this whole thing with timing with respect to Columbia. And so I'll let you kind of weigh in on this stuff, but they had a number of questions. They were also worried about how much work experience they have, 6 years now, soon to be seven if they apply this coming year. So yeah, I'll let you tackle those things, recommendation letters issue, work experience, and kind of timing of reapps.
Yeah, super interesting. They do like to use their acronyms, right? It's quite funny. C and B were for the schools. PWM, Private Wealth Management, then FWIW. That's for what it's worth, Graham, in case you were questioning
that one. Yeah,
too.
I knew that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Just checking. Obviously, this is a super smart person. They've done well. You know, their GMAT's very strong. They're working in private wealth management. So let's pick off each of their questions as they come. One, in terms of last year, I can see how they were tripped up, right? So perhaps with the first school that they applied to, which was the first school? Was that?
They applied to Booth right after they took the GMAT in round one.
Yeah, so they applied to Booth right after they took the GMAT. So they admitted that maybe their application wasn't as strong as it could be because they didn't necessarily prep it well or whatever that might be. So that could have derailed them a little bit. Maybe they sort of fall into a slightly overrepresented bucket. So even with the good numbers, they just didn't stand out because the execution wasn't perfect. They got their execution up to speed by the time they applied to Columbia. But applying to Columbia in January is just not a good idea for anybody.
Yeah.
I just, you know, not only are you not applying early decision, but you're not even applying early in the rolling admission. So you're telling Columbia that, you know what, I've got no other option, so I'm going to toss in an application to you and see what you say, and this is what they say.
Right.
Absolutely, as a reapp, you can fix the Columbia issue by getting into that early decision. And surely with the Booth issue, as a reapplicant, you've spent a lot more time thinking about this stuff. So you will come back with a much better executed candidacy.
Mm-hmm.
But again, all reapplicants in my book need to apply in that first round. Don't come back in round two or in January in Columbia's thing and then wonder why you tripped up again, because you will trip up again.
Yeah.
So that's that. I get so a couple of other things. To the extent that they can show some development over the additional year. I know this person's a little bit further on in their career, 6 years now, 7 years of experience. But maybe they could talk about some additional interesting projects or whatever it might be. And again, I recognize that during the COVID situation, that might not be as accessible, but hopefully show some kind of progress over the year. And then as you're applying as someone with 7 years of experience, you really do need to articulate a couple of things. Why now is a good time for you to get an MBA? So there's still a good opportunity. You want to transition into investment banking and you see this is the right pathway to do it. But also show that you will be someone who's going to be fully engaged in the MBA experience. To me, that's sort of standard for an older candidate, that they need to do that. So not just showing up to classes and checking the boxes in that regard and doing a bit of recruiting for investment banking. But what clubs are you going to get involved in? How are you going to improve the community there for other folks that are going to be there? The stereotype older candidate just doesn't do this stuff, right? So making sure that they do that. The recommendation issue, I get it, Graham. I don't really have a great answer for that. So I'm going to turn that bit over to you.
Okay. So first of all, well said on the other stuff. I think, yeah, the recommendations, the issue that this candidate talks about is like, got to apply again. And, you know, it sounds like the managers who wrote the letters weren't like super happy that this person wanted to leave. I mean, you never are, you know, you don't want to lose talent off to business school, I guess. And so
they lost promotions.
Yeah, so this person even says that like they were passed over for a promotion because of the fact that it's, you know, they made it clear that they wanted to go off to business school. So it's a bit dicey. A couple of things. First of all, you don't need two letters from two different people when you're a reapplicant. You know, in fact, a lot of schools will allow you just to submit a single recommendation letter, and it could be from one of the same people. It just can be refreshed. I would never submit a kind of verbatim, you know, a kind of resubmit the same letter. I think, you know, ideally it reflects some of the growth or things that have happened in the past year. But yeah, this is tricky. I mean, I would encourage this candidate to sit down with whoever it is, or if there are two people that they need in some cases, you know, and just, you know, explain. I mean, hopefully they're working hard and they've been, you know, they're going to make the most out of this extra year at the company and, you know, do right by the company in that regard. But it is tricky. I recognize that. I will say, as a reapplicant, you're better off having the same person write for you and refresh their letter with, you know, just kind of a reiteration of your commitment to business school and all the great things you've been doing since you applied the first time, than it would be to like find someone who doesn't know you as well and who's kind of like a real, almost like a random person to write the rec just to have it be a different person. So I would not take that path. I think, you know, most people reapplying invariably are going to have to use the same folks. It's rare to have like multiple direct managers who, you know, can really write in detail about you. So yeah, I would advise get coffee or have a phone call if you're not seeing people in person, but spend some time figuring this thing out. And, you know, I mean, they should ultimately, if they really care about you and are the right kind of person to be writing this letter, they should, you know, be supportive of the fact that you're still battling to get in and that you really want to go to business school. And as long as you're doing your work, I don't see why, you know, they wouldn't be supportive. And if they're not, then you maybe need to, you know, think about somebody else, right? So that's my take, Alex. Anything to add on that, though?
No, I think that's great. Yeah, I mean, I know it's a tough situation. And I know it's easy for me to say, do an, you know, show some progress over the additional year or a different project or whatever. And I know that's compromised by the fact that you're overturned for a promotion. So, I mean, it is, I recognize it's a tough spot.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. I did want to mention one thing. I made a note to myself is that I really want this candidate to embrace their kind of global citizenship. So the person's originally from South Asia. But they did part of their undergrad from a U.S. state school. I guess they did an exchange and, you know, they joined a bank and got transferred into international offices in Southeast Asia. And so they really, it sounds like, had a pretty interesting global experience to date, which is, you know, that's going to help them stand out too. And so I you know, whenever I hear someone who's asked to reapply and almost makes the cut but didn't, you know, it makes me wonder if, you know, if there's room for improvement in the application materials. And, you know, they even indicated that that may very well be the case, particularly with Booth. So, yeah, go back to the drawing board a little bit. Look at your materials with as critical of an eye as you can. But again, I like the profile, and I don't see why this person won't be able to achieve their goals. Do you think they have enough schools on their list? They've got INSEAD, Columbia, and Booth. Do you think that they need to be adding some other schools that could help them get into investment banking? Like, what's your take there?
Yeah, I mean, that would be another line of inquiry, wouldn't it? What other schools would be a good pathway to banking? Obviously, I mean, we talked about it a bunch of times before, but Johnson would come to mind.
Yeah.
To sort of, I'm not saying hedging their bets a little bit, but obviously they're in a tier below what they're currently targeting. And that might make sense too, is just have a little bit of a spread.
Yeah.
In terms of those target schools. So yeah, it might be worth exploring a couple of programs in that next tier.
Yeah, and I also wondered, I mean, other schools that came to mind, and then we can move on and talk about our third candidate, but other schools that jumped into my head were LBS. They have INSEAD on the list, so they're obviously unless they're thinking about INSEAD Singapore or something, but maybe LBS, maybe Yale is another one. Wharton comes up, but that's, you know, that would be in the same tier or even a little bit higher than the one they're punching in already. So if we're looking to expand the scope, then yeah, Yale, Cornell, LBS, that would make sense. So best of luck to that candidate. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is another ApplyWire entry that we received. The candidate is applying to 8 schools and is hoping to start in the fall of 22. The schools are Berkeley, Carnegie Mellon, Duke, MIT, Kellogg, Stanford, UCLA, and Yale. This person's been working as a product manager, I guess, in a leading e-commerce company in Southeast Asia. They want to stay in tech or maybe pivot more formally into tech after business school. And the companies they have on their list are Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Google, and Microsoft, kind of a who's who of big tech companies. They have a 720 on the GMAT, a 3.6 GPA, and 3 years of work experience. This candidate is originally from Indonesia, but lives in Singapore. And, you know, basically some interesting tidbits here. You know, they earned their bachelor's degree at Nanyang Technical University in Singapore in mechanical engineering, specializing in robotics. And the reason I mention that is because Nanyang is, I mean, that's sort of the tech school for engineers to go to. And it's a really well-noted school. So that 3.6 in that major out of that school speaks volumes to me. They shared a whole bunch of other interesting accomplishments and work-related stuff. But Alex, I wanted to kind of ask you, what do you make of this candidate? And particularly, are you worried about work experience? They have 3 years. Is it enough? I mean, they were, you know, the other thing I wanted to get your take on is they were really active in undergraduate, it seems, in terms of outside activities, maybe less so now. So what's your take on this candidate?
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is a potential, they show so much potential in terms of superstar status. The question is now the right time, in terms of 3 years, should they wait another year and so on and so forth. But frankly, Graham, it sounds like they've done some fantastic stuff in the 3 years that they've been working. So they're what I would call a fast tracker and certainly top programs to the extent that they can tease out folks that are clearly on the fast track and clearly are going to rock the world in the future. They're going to take folks in that bucket that have less years of experience, for sure. So, quite honestly, I think this person sets up to be a very strong candidate in that regard. I mean, quite frankly, I'm not sure what I was doing picking these candidates this week because they're all ridiculously strong in one way or another. So we're not just talking about the ordinary universe here. Super strong. You added the tidbit in terms of their undergraduate performance and so forth, combination with a strong, relatively strong GMAT, I suppose. I'm not sure what the holes are. Now, if you're super busy in undergrad, in extracurriculars, and you're a leader on campus, to me that shows, again, you're a leader on campus, you're a leader, you make things happen, that's very good outside of what you have to do, i.e. go to classes and stuff. The fact that that drops off a little bit during your work, you can account for that if you're super busy. Like, we can't expect someone that, I mean, we obviously don't know this particular individual's direct situation, but if someone's working 70 or 80 hours a week, Maybe they don't have the wherewithal at this present time to be doing, you know, leading activities in outside of work. But the fact that they have a pattern of doing it when they could do it says to me as an ADCOM, well, I still think they're a person that's going to get involved and they come on campus and they're going to be a good human being going forward in life and so on and so forth. So I'm not as worried about that. But anyway, I'll turn it over to you. I like this guy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually an important point, though, that you're making, is which is that not everyone's going to have an entire portfolio of current activities. And, you know, while it can be great to have that, if you don't, the next best thing is to be able to demonstrate a track record of, you know, really great involvement as an undergraduate. And, you know, if you're doing great things at work and working long hours, et cetera, then, you know, I think the admissions committee can recognize that, okay, if this person comes into our program, they're going to be active. They have a track record of when they're in a university environment being really active. And it's not like this person's doing nothing. They do have a few things that they do. It just, it seems somewhat less formal than all the stuff they've been doing as an undergrad. But I get that. So and the only other thing I was going to say is, we don't know if this candidate is male or female. We know that they're in Southeast Asia. They're, you know, they're in Singapore, originally from Indonesia. Do you think a 720 on the GMAT is good enough? And we don't have the breakdown or anything, but do you think that the average for people from that corner of the world getting in is going to be higher? Or are you at all worried about that? Or you kind of feel like, look, GPA is good from a good school. I'm not going to sweat this. The 720 is right around or just below average at a lot of these top schools.
The world is round, Graham, so there's no corners.
There you go.
How about that for an insight that you're going to learn from this podcast?
Oh, man. Yeah, all right. Yeah, you're back up on stage with your Wharton, you know, stand-up
stuff. Yeah, yeah.
All right, so, okay, but seriously.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point. Someone with their academic experience, the GMAT doesn't stand out. Now, it's a ridiculously high score to the general universe, like
sure,
for folks like myself or something like that. But you do wonder how much effort this person put in, or whether they were just, you know, took a punt and got the 720
yep,
because they're ridiculously
yep,
smart. If that is the case, i.e. they took a punt and got a 720, yeah, maybe I'd encourage them to go get that 760 with some preparation. But if they did work hard and got the 720, I think they've got a lot of other stuff that says they're super smart.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'd love to know if they've taken the test more than once and what the breakdown was. But again, they could get into some of these schools on their list without a problem
yeah,
with the existing stats. I mean, I think some of them, you know, in particular, if we, you know, like whatever, you know, CMU and Duke and you know, UCLA, Yale, they're squarely in the running at these schools. I mean, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, obviously they're in the running at all of them, but I think some of these other schools on the list, the Stanfords of the world, maybe have on the margin slightly higher, you know, test score averages and things. So just keep that in mind. But I like this candidate. I think, yeah, you did a great job picking them out this week. Although you told me that we had very few entries this week because it was so quiet. So
if you only get three entries, if we get three good entries like this, I'm very happy. But yeah, it's that time of year, but it'd be good to get some more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing we got those three, because otherwise you and I would have to just talk about random stuff. So
I would have made stuff up. Don't worry about that, Graham.
All right, so we've done it again. We've run through all three candidates for this week's episode of Wiretaps. Thanks for picking them out, or at least copying and pasting their URLs into our pre-podcast planning stuff, if there were only three, in fact. But yeah, we'll do it all again next week, Alex, and thanks for your time on this, as always.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot. Stay safe, everyone.